Welcome to the jungle. We start hour number two. It is great to be with you. How was your weekend? How are you all living? What's going on in Southern California? We are live in the Quicken Loan Studio. Supply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Nice to have you here. All right, coming up later on this hour, John Morosi. That's going to be at 40 past. We already had a conversation with Cameron Jordan. We had Jim Trotter. Phone lines are wide open. I started the program off by slamming that Crow Sando because I had the Chargers over the Patriots. And like I said, I'll keep doing it. I want to get into the other matchups, especially the Rams and the Cowboys and what went down here in Los Angeles. Hit me up right now. The phone lines are open. You couldn't get through an hour one, but you can right now. 1-800-636-8686. I can easily carry this thing. I've got takes for days coming off that weekend. I don't need phone calls. I want phone calls. If it's a good phone call, you go right up. If not, I'm just going to keep bumping my gums. You have your number. You know where to find me on Twitter. You know where to find me on email. You know where my Facebook page is. You know where my Instagram feed is. Like five different ways to get through. Really quickly. So I mentioned I got down for this weekend. I'm going to tell you what happened with my picks really quickly. And this show's never going to be exclusively about gambling or betting. It will never be that show. Nor is it going to be a show where the host comes on and has got nothing to talk about. So I think I'll talk about all my bad beats. Let's just get into this. But just as a matter of context, because I know a lot of you play these games and you got down and we could all share our stories. Really quickly, I'm going to tell you how my weekend went. All right. So I bet all these games and Colts and Chiefs. I went Chiefs. I laid the points. I won 1-0. Felt really good about me. Cowboys and Rams. I'll be straight about this. I love the way the Cowboys were playing coming in. They were running the hell out of the ball. I was concerned about the Rams' ability to stop the run. I thought the Rams would win that game, but I thought it would be tight. I thought it would be a battle. And I got a pretty good line on the Cowboys. There were a lot of points there. And I thought they were playing really well with a lot of confidence. I thought it was going to be an issue here in L.A. in terms of the home field. In fact, by the way, I was in Dallas on Friday night. When I flew back Saturday morning, there were Cowboy fans on the plane getting ready to go to the game. I felt pretty good about that pick. I went Cowboys and the points. Lost that one. 1-1. No problem. Still felt good about the Sunday games. You know I felt good about the Chargers. All right? So I took the Chargers and the points. Got jacked up there. Suddenly my weekend from that standpoint is not going too well. Now I'm 1-2 going into the last game. And I went, believe it or not, I didn't love this angle, but it's the only angle I had. Saints plus 8. And then Philadelphia comes out and they score that first touchdown. So now I'm 1-2 and I'm losing my last one. And now I'm starting to chase already. I'm starting to sweat it. So what did I do? Did I hold the line? Did I stay the course? Did I keep my head? Hell no. I went back in. I went back in. And I tripled the bet at -2.5. Save the weekend, yo. Chasing does work sometimes. Sometimes chasing does work. Got him at -2.5. Save the weekend. All good. How'd it go for you?
Yo.
Double up ketchup. Yo. Double up ketchup. So that's how that went. And all of a sudden, some of my buddies like, yeah, great, great. What do you got this weekend? I mean, I feel like a football player. Can I? There's a 24-hour rule. Can I not enjoy what I did? Double up, catch up. 1-800-636-8686. I mentioned I had an awesome flight to Dallas going out on Friday. I got to tell you about this. Awesome, awesome flight. I'll give you a little teaser. So one of the perks of this job, if you've done this thing 30 years, the way I've done this thing 30 years, one of the perks is a lot of times you get to fly kind of close to the front. Business, first class. I'm not in any way trying to be a D-bag about this. It's just nice, right? It is. It's nice. Now, we pay for these tickets, so you earn the tickets, but it's a nice thing. You know what's not so nice? When you're seated in 4E and a flight attendant comes up to you right before takeoff and says, "I'm sorry, sir, I'm going to have to ask you to go back to the 20th row." Real thing, that happened. You know, I was just there looking at my phone, minding my own business. I'm like, wait, what? Oh, it was incredible. I'm pretty awesome. And if I have time, I will get there too. But I want to talk about the games. Go ahead, Chael, bring it on in. 1-800-636-8686. So the Patriots had something for all their critics, me and everybody else, on Sunday. But the Rams did their work on Saturday, and they did work. And then they talked. You see, going into that game, the Dallas Cowboys were doing a lot of talking. The Cowboys were on a roll. The Cowboys had turned their season around. They beat Seattle in the wild card game. They were feeling it. The Cowboys were acting like they had just won the Super Bowl. That's how much talking they were doing. Then again, you go as long as the Cowboys have without winning a playoff game, that probably did feel like winning the Super Bowl to them. So they were enjoying the hell out of it, and they were talking a lot. DeMarcus Lawrence told reporters earlier in the week that he had plans for Jared Goff.
I don't like quarterbacks. So my impression is the same. I go into every week, you know, wanting to take a quarterback soul.
All right, so I don't like quarterbacks, and I've got the same plan every single week. I'm looking to take a quarterback soul. Now, this guy generally, he talks a lot, but he backs it up, generally. He was not the only guy talking. Amari Cooper was doing some talking. Cooper said he had an edge because he had faced Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters when he was with Oakland and they played in the AFC West.
You know, I played against those guys twice a year, both of them. I know them in and out. I know how they play. And I'm able to tell, like, my teammates or quarterback, you know, their tendencies.
So they were doing a lot of talking and on record. And 130-22 win later, here is what Talib and Peters were saying right back. Talib busted into a national TV interview of Jared Goff so he could tell everybody that DeMarcus Lawrence ain't talk, taking no bleeping soul.
We know this defense, and we prepared for it well all week. And what type?
Chris Myers talking to Jared Goff. And then he had Peters yelling at the Cowboys as they left the field. I can't repeat what he was yelling, but it was just as spicy. He later said, quote, "That was for Amari Cooper. He got strapped today." He said he knew us. Looks like he don't know us too well because y'all just lost. End quote. And it wasn't only Lawrence and Cooper that the Rams were bent about. One Rams player told Robert Klemko, quote, "When I see Stephen A. Smith, I'm going to smack him upside his head." End quote. See, the Rams, though, they didn't wait. They didn't wait to smack guys upside their heads. They were smacking anybody and everybody. If you had a star on the side of your helmet, you were probably getting punched in the face. For a team that was not running the way they would have liked recently, they did whatever the hell they wanted on the ground to the Cowboys. 273 yards and 3 touchdowns on the ground. Gouge them. And that's a team that you're not supposed to be able to run the ball against. And they ran it right down their throats all game long. And while everybody focuses on the Rams' skill position players and their head coach, it's easy to forget about the Ram offensive line. Those guys reminded everybody on Saturday night, don't forget about us. They dominated a Cowboy front seven that shut down the best running game in the league a week earlier. As Andrew Whitworth had said, the offensive line heard what DeMarcus Lawrence said about stealing souls. Quote, "We heard it. He didn't get crap all night, and they got buried. I think we've said all we need to say," end quote. And speaking of guys getting buried, how about CJ freaking Anderson? He was buried a few weeks back. He was cut by Carolina in November, signed by Oakland in early December, cut a week later. When the Rams called, this guy was in the process of moving from a rental home in Charlotte back to his permanent home in Texas. He admits he had given up on this year football-wise. My man was carrying boxes. He had toted the rock for a total of 104 yards in 2018. Then the Rams call, he answers. Then they call on Saturday night, and he answers again. 23 carries, 123 yards, 2 touchdowns. His third straight 100-yard game for the Rams. This guy's a freaking beast. An absolute load to bring down. So if you want to come for C.J. Anderson, I suggest you come in a pack because he's not going down with one guy and he's not going down with an arm tackle. As he told MMQB, quote, I heard the soul comment. I also heard the O, C.J. Anderson. He had two games against the Niners and the Cardinals comment. You don't look into that. I let my game speak for itself. Obviously, the O-line took that personally. So we just let our game speak for itself. Every team is going to have a player, whoever that is, that's going to jaw-jack. And, of course, we have some jaw-jackers on our team, too. End quote. They do. They've got some jaw-jackers. They've got some soul-stealers. And they've got some guys that'll punch you in the face. Maybe it's the extra week off. But one thing was clear. The Cowboys had prided themselves on their physicality, but the Rams were way more physical on both sides of the ball, and it wasn't even close. They rushed for 273 yards. Then they held the Cowboys to 50 yards rushing. So, so much for that idea that Dallas was just going to come into L.A., take over the Coliseum, and run all over the Rams. Cowboy fans showed up, but so did the Rams on both sides of the ball. And that tells you everything you need to know about Sean McVay as a head coach. See, everybody with a head coach has been looking for the next Sean McVay. While that was going on, though, Sean McVay was looking for his first playoff win. And I mentioned it last week. The guy had to have it. The Rams are no longer that nice story that they were last season. Now they're a team with enormous expectations, a big bullseye on their back, and they're on the clock now. They had to deliver. And they did. And while everybody wants to make out McVay and talk about McVay for his wide-open offense, his crazy passing schemes, his jet sweeps, this guy just won a must-win football game with power football. He outpowered a power football team, even to the point of going for it on fourth and goal in the fourth quarter when a field goal made more sense from a math standpoint, not from an attitude and confidence standpoint. So if you want to know what makes this guy great, what makes this guy so unique, what makes this guy so different, it's not the pass plays that he draws up. It's the way that this guy connects with his players, the way he understands them, and the way they understand him. And now you get the Saints. Man, I cannot wait. That clock can't spin quickly enough. Can't wait. And neither can the Rams, Todd Gurley said. Todd Gurley said this about his knee and about the win this weekend.
Feels good.
Really good?
Real good. Great, actually.
Okay.
But this ain't we still got one more. Keep winning. We got to keep winning.
Feels good, but this ain't bleep. We still got one more. Keep winning. We got to keep winning. Man, freaking ram it. So impressive. Really impressive, but this is a different deal. Damn, Alvin, you will not believe who I have an email from right here. This is old school. Like, there's nobody next to you from the 2.0 XR4TI that even knows who this guy is. Like, Chael brought this in and probably brought it in because Hawk said it was okay to bring in. Do you guys know who this is? Wow, this is old school. Dear Jim, who does that emailer think he is cracking on Rams fans and SoCal culture? As a longtime Ram fan who has been watching them since before Thanksgiving. Here you go. As a longtime Rams fan who has been watching them since before Thanksgiving, and as somebody who lives in SoCal, when I'm not Instagramming from my Hawaii beach house, I take these insults personally. If my Escalade wasn't stuck in traffic caused by all these stupid teachers striking because they're too poor to afford Botox, I would drive straight to that loser's trailer park and make fun of him for not owning custom-made suits or having a personal trainer. Thanks. Signed, Rams fan. Alvy, Stu in Manhattan. Oh, man. What were Stu's glory days? I think way back in the day, Stu may have held the jungle record for getting 7 emails read in a single day. I mean, Stu in Manhattan goes way back. Stu, if you had to guess, when did you first start participating with this program? When did you first start emailing me? And Stu, did you know there's this thing called Twitter? You can actually go on social now and participate. Stu's probably like looking for the text contest still. Or the old fax machine. Hey, Rome, what about that fax contest? doing Manhattan. Blast from the past. 1-800-636-8686. The Chargers, that could not have gone any worse. Could not have gone any better for the Patriots. Rick in Buffalo is in. Rick in Buffalo tweets, Brady's the best dink and dunker of all time. Throws a mean screen pass and a killer 7-yard out. Won't travel well to Arrowhead. Chiefs 41-10. Fair question. Now, I did say I'm never, ever, ever, ever going to pick against these guys again. They're done when Brady and Belichick say they're done. But I could pose the question, is it going to travel? I know what they look like. How about this? I know what they look like after a week off at home in the divisional round against a defense that comes in and tries to zone them up and does not make any adjustment until it's way too late. I know how they look at home, but I've watched them this season on the road. What they did to the Chargers has not traveled well this year. Will it travel to KC, who suddenly found their defense, who can pressure the quarterback? Yeah, I said it. I'm not picking against these guys ever again. Ever. But is Rick right? Quote, won't travel well to Arrowhead. And now that Kansas City's got that monkey off their back, will they play a little bit looser? Man, they're so different with Patrick Mahomes. It's a different guy altogether. And one more email before I go to break. Dear Rome, I had to put that team on my back Saturday. You know how good the food is in NOLA? I wouldn't miss eating there for the world. Yours? Cheesecakey Jambalaya Anderson. Aaron in Omaha. War Anderson getting a spot on the Rams O-line next year. War my good email to bad email ratio clearing 15-1 after this one. Hey, Aaron. That's one of your worst emails. Don't be a moron. Omaha! But what is it that y'all can't figure out about C.J. Anderson? He's saving their season, man. Off the street, off the scrap heap, and killing it. And now you've got that 1-2 punch. They just ran for 273 yards on a team you can't run against. Hey, what do you know? For all that talk about offense, and especially the Rams offense, for all that talk about offense, what won for them? The ability to run the football and stop the run. This is why Sean McVay is so incredible. It's not just about scheming up and dialing up unbelievable pass plays. Punched him in the face. Man, get off this guy. CJ, get the hell off this guy. When we come back, quick segment, then John Morosi, 40 past. All of that still ahead.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
So what do y'all want to talk about? I see y'all want to find out how I went from seat 4E to 20F. Or whatever it was. I'll try and get you out a little bit later on. We've got John Morosi coming up next segment. Among other things, we'll talk about Kyler Murray and what he might do. In the meantime, short segment. I've got time for a phone call or two. Let's go to Coronado Island. Charlie, good to have you on. How are you?
Good. I'm doing fine, Jim. Thank you so much for taking my call. I've been waiting a long time to talk to you.
Good.
I'm a Charger fan. I've lived in Coronado, California for about 45 years now. Followed the Chargers 45 years. Last season, they were here in San Diego. I bought tickets for the season tickets, went to all the Save the Charger rallies, grew up in the area of Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler. My dad at one time was a part-time recruiter for Bo Schembechler. And I see a lot of similarities with Michigan and the way they play Ohio State and the way the Chargers have played in the playoffs, you know. I mean, 0-8 against the Patriots in playoffs. I'm disgusted. When they moved to L.A., I was really bummed about it. I rooted for them to lose. And then they started playing better and better, you know. And then I watched them this year, and I rooted for them, you know. And I was so disappointed yesterday.
Yeah, I think it's well said, actually. Charlie, thanks. Good to talk to you finally. That's what it was. It was disappointing. I mean, it was just disappointing. You could sit here and say, man, I'm so mad, I'm so pissed, I'm furious, but it just was disappointing. I mean, look, the Chargers had a great regular season. They did. And yes, I liked them a lot going into that game. They had not lost outside of Southern California. They were coming off a big playoff win in Baltimore's house. They had won. It's been much chronicled, but they won in five different time zones. On paper, I thought they were more talented than the Patriots. I thought they were deeper than the Patriots. I thought that Philip Rivers coming in was playing every bit as well, if not better, than Tom Brady. Hell yes, I liked them. I liked them a lot. I felt that they were different. I felt that the Pats were not what the Pats had been. That if it was ever going to happen for the Chargers, it was going to happen this year. Again, Rivers was playing as well as he ever had. He had a better supporting cast than he ever had, including a defense that could get to the quarterback. I liked them. I picked them. I felt pretty damn good about it, too. The more things change, the more they stay exactly the same for both of those teams. And that bye week is so big for the Pats. That bye week is so big for the Pats. The rap coming in was they weren't the same team. Their stars were no longer the same players. Some, including Gronk, were actually shot fighters, no longer able to pull the trigger. Fading stars. Yeah, fading stars. That or as dominant as they've ever been. It is incredible what a week off will do for some of these guys that time of year. No, it's amazing what a week off will do for all of these guys that time of year, but especially for the Patriots. I mean, these guys, these so-called stars that look so faded, they look like they were 5 years younger. So never, ever underestimate the value of that first-round bye ever again. Never, ever underestimate the Pats ever again. Never throw dirt on these guys ever again. They're not done until the Hood and TB12 say they're done. So I'm going to say this is much more about the Pats than it is the Chargers. But to sit here and say that that's not a really disappointing day for the Chargers just wouldn't be accurate. It was. It really was. They were outclassed. They did not, at least on that day, they did not belong on the same field with the Pats. Completely outclassed, outplayed, outcoached. Just a bad day all the way around. Really bad day. They'll be back. They'll live to fight another day. But I wonder if Philip Rivers is ever going to have as good of a look as he had this year. 1-800-636-8686. I'm going to change up. Talk some baseball for a few moments. John Morosi joins me. We are open the rest of the way. I want to talk about the other games that I've not gotten to yet. We can look ahead to championship weekend. Yes, I got bumped from row 4 to row 20 for minding my own business. They did not drag me off the plane. There was no video of me making a scene. I didn't rush to Twitter to complain about it. It was all pretty amusing, actually, especially the reason given. That story a little bit later on. John Morosi next, but first, here's a sports update for you.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to the jungle. Hope you're having a good day. All right, so we continue. Middle of hour number two. Let me change up on you. Talk about something a little bit different. We are joined by a Renaissance man representing MLB Network, NHL Network, Fox Sports. Good friend of the program, John Morosi, joins us. John, nice to have you on. How are you?
Jim, outstanding. Happy New Year to you, my friend. Great to be back on the air with you. Love this time of year with all the hot stove still happening and a really unique baseball football story here with the young Kyler Murray.
In fact, that's where I'm going to start. I was going to say, John, Happy New Year, but I thought, man, I don't do stuff like that on the 14th, but I thought the exact same thing. Happy New Year. Nice to have you back. All right, so why don't...
Thank you. I always feel like, Jim, anytime we can bring joy to each other's lives, my friend, it's always a good thing to start something with a Happy New Year greeting. I always think it's a good time to say that.
Nice job. I agree with you. All right, so you mentioned Kyler Murray. Let's start right there. It's one of the bigger stories in two different sports at the moment. Today is a significant day, John, but before we get into that, what do you make of how this particular story has changed over the last few weeks?
Well, it's really fascinating, Jim. And, of course, originally the plan, and then going back to the summer, was that Kyler Murray was going to play one more year with Oklahoma and then turn pro in baseball. And no one probably, at least maybe certainly those close to him, probably knew what he could do, but wasn't widely expected to win the Heisman this year. Of course, now we know what's happened. And I think that the deeper he has gone into it, Jim, he probably realizes that as he is moving up the draft boards and there's a greater – I think awareness in the NFL about what he could do at that level, that once you know, or at least you're confident that you'd be a first-round NFL draft pick, then the notion of having to give up your MLB signing bonus to turn pro and play football is much less daunting because he'll probably get even more money guaranteed up front to play in the NFL. And also, there is no need to play in the minor leagues. I mean, as we speak here right now, Jim, he has just played two seasons of varsity baseball at the University of Oklahoma, about 238 collegiate plate appearances. So he's got a long way to go to catch up with his peers. And I think it's important to note that you look at someone like Ronald Acuna Jr., one of the stars of the National League this year, Rookie of the Year. He is actually younger than Kyler Murray, had 1,000 at-bats in the minor leagues and is now already a star in the major leagues, which gives you an idea, Jim, of just how much time Kyler Murray has to spend to get back up to speed on the baseball diamond.
These are all really good points. John Morosi joining us. Now, the significance of today, John, today is the deadline for underclassmen to declare for the NFL draft. If Murray does so before midnight tonight, what impact, if any, will that have on his baseball future?
Well, it's interesting. Today, on this day, Jim, very little. Because what that does is just preserves the option for him to continue to consider the National Football League. And I would imagine that his advice, his counsel, the information coming into him would probably increase as he gets more information once he declares, as a lot of people expect him to do today. So this does not meaningfully change his baseball future yet. I say yet because, of course, we know what happens next month. You've got two things. The start of spring training and the NFL scouting combine. And you can't be in both places at once. If Murray goes to spring training for a week and then leaves to go to the combine, based on what I'm told, Jim, that would be a breach of the guarantee language of his contract, and he would have to give up his signing bonus at that point in time. So he can really, at that point in time, probably in the next several weeks, you have to make a decision. Basically, he's due to report for Major League spring training with the Oakland Athletics 1 month from almost today. And so once he arrives there, then the assumption would be, if he does, that he'll be a baseball player from that point forward. He is not going to try to play both sports at the same time. But again, he's got a few weeks now to make a final decision. Does he go to spring training? Does he go to the combine? He cannot do both.
John Morosi joining us. In fact, got to my very next point. I was going to say, John, you can't be in two places at one time, but there have been athletes in the past who have been able to play both professional baseball and professional football at the same time. Is it in any way, and you touched on this, but is it in any way possible in his case?
Not right now, not concurrently, from what I can tell, Jim. I think there have been cases, certainly Drew Henson played baseball and then went back and played football, and I think Drew would probably tell us if he were having a conversation with us today that he may handle things a little bit differently if he had to do it all over again. He told me once that he wanted to go back, and if he could do it all over again, he would have played his senior year of football at Michigan and waited to make that final determination once he had one more final year of football, and perhaps that would have nudged him toward playing in the National Football League instead of for the New York Yankees. So it's we've seen in the past, certainly we remember well the careers of Deion Sanders and Bo Jackson and Brian Jordan. But for an NFL quarterback, Jim, today, I think it's even more complicated than it was for Drew Henson basically a generation ago, where the position is so demanding at the highest level of football in our country that it really is doing a disservice to the player to ask him to do both. So Kyler Murray would have to choose one or the other. I think that everybody, his advisors, I know I spoke with one of the people in his camp here the last couple days, and that there's an acknowledgement there that he's not even going to really try to do both. As much as he might love to do it, it's not going to be attempted, at least at this point in time. Now, notably, if he decides to play football, the A's would continue to hold his rights as long as they can find a spot for him on a minor league roster and keep him protected on one of those lists, which is not all that hard to do. But notably, of course, Russell Wilson originally was a member of the Colorado Rockies and has been to spring training now with the Rangers and the Yankees because he is still – somewhere on a minor league roster. So it's a very unique circumstance, but I would imagine that the Oakland Athletics, while not owing him the bonus any longer, would at least still retain his rights should Kyler decide to pursue the NFL at this time.
John Morosi breaking it all down for us. All right, John, so in the case of Oakland, what is their pitch to Murray right now?
Well, it's a great question, and part of that, Jim, is the marketing side of things. They actually had a meeting yesterday with Scott Boras and of course, his agent on the baseball side, the A's front office, key members there, Billy Bean, I believe David Forrest, the GM, was there too, and also some marketing executives from MLB that wanted to come down and speak to Kyler about what he could do off the field as an ambassador for the sport here across the country and what commercial success that could bring him as well. So that's part of it. MLB, based on what I've been told, Jim, would permit the Oakland Athletics to give Kyler a major league contract at this point in time, which is not typically done for a player who has not yet made his major league debut upon being drafted. It used to be under previous basic agreements that you could have a major league deal, not under the current one, but in this case, MLB is comfortable, from what I've been told, with the A's giving him that major league deal, probably a little extra money there as a further incentive, perhaps, for him to choose baseball. So it's a fascinating time for the sport. I think baseball, people around the game, and Jeff Passan's reported on this, and Ken Rosenthal as well, that people around the game want to see Kyler play baseball. He'd be great for baseball, great for the notoriety of the game. But we all realize the bright lights, Jim, and the allure of being an NFL quarterback, especially a first-round pick, which by all accounts, or at least many accounts, Kyler Murray is likely to be should he continue to pursue football.
John Morosi all over that angle. All right, John, thanks for that. Listen, the other big story of the offseason has been the free agency of Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. Overall, what do you make of how free agency has panned out for both of them?
Slow. Certainly here we are in the middle of January and neither has signed yet. I don't think it's totally surprising that this is the case, but it is notable that here we are with another offseason when waiting is the operative method by a lot of teams, and it's because it works. You saw the Red Sox last year, they signed J.D. Martinez after spring training began. They won the World Series. Bryce Harper, a big meeting over the weekend with the Philadelphia Phillies in his hometown of Las Vegas. Reports say the Phillies are potentially moving to the forefront of the Harper sweepstakes. I was told by a source over the weekend that the Phillies feel good about their chances to get either Harper or Machado. And a report yesterday from Jeff Passan, the White Sox have now expanded their offer to be 8 years to Manny Machado. So we could see Harper go to the Phillies. We could see Machado go to the White Sox. And then once that happens, Jim, we should get a lot more clarity on the rest of the marketplace. Even though I think I was of the mind, and I know we talked about this back in the summertime, I think that Harper would have been a great fit with the Los Angeles Dodgers and may still be. But the Dodgers, Jim, are being very discerning about going beyond 5 or 6 years for Harper. And Harper, of course, wants much more than that.
You know, I'm going to try and double back to that. But if, in fact, he had that meeting with Philadelphia and it went pretty well and it was a five-hour meeting, how do you think he would fit in with that Philly roster?
Well, I think, Jim, he would be a really nice middle part of the lineup, of course, unto himself. He's got such great presence. This is a team that really faded down the stretch, and they finished the year right around 500 in a very competitive division. The Nationals, of course, Harper's most recent team, they got a lot better. They brought in Patrick Corbin. I thought it was a very good deal for them to bring in Brian Dozier and a new catching tandem, Yan Gomes and Kurt Suzuki. So the Nationals have made a number of really good moves, and we've seen the Mets make some pretty big splashes. And oh, by the way, the Braves are the reigning division champions, and they brought in Josh Donaldson and Brian McCann. So it's a very, very competitive division, but I think for the Phillies, they look at it and say, listen, if we can bring in Bryce Harper, take him away from the roster of one of our competitors in the division, the Nationals, and put him on our team, he would make everyone better. And I think, Jim, one thing that I look at in baseball nowadays, the best teams in free agency, the ones that have the greatest incentive to act, have a greater narrative around their pursuit than just simply filling a spot in the roster. The Phillies, we know, they're a team that's won the World Series about a decade ago. They've got the capacity to really up their payroll, play in a major East Coast market. They just have to find the right ways to allocate that money, and they've been really expecting to spend big. So he's the perfect guy if you want to spend big. Manny Machado on the south side of Chicago, same thing, a team that has to announce its return to the baseball landscape as being a really relevant team. When you want to announce your arrival, Jim, spending on big players like Harper and Machado is a fine way to do that.
All right, John, so I get those narratives. What about the narrative as it relates to the L.A. Dodgers? They go back to the World Series again. They come up short again. What do you make of how they've approached the offseason, including the recent trade for Russell Martin?
Curious, I think, Jim. Of course, they began the offseason by retaining Clayton Kershaw, but they have made a number of moves that, to me, if I'm a Dodger fan, would be unsatisfying. They could have potentially acquired JT Realmuto in via the trade market, even DJ LeMahieu to play second base. Instead, DJ goes to the New York Yankees, and by all accounts, it appears that the Dodgers are a little bit on the periphery of the Harper sweepstakes. This is simply the way that Andrew Friedman has run organizations for a long time. He has not been someone who has tied too much of his future into one player. It's much more of a collective approach with the farm system and finding really solid, overlooked players like Chris Taylor and Max Muncy. So in addition to the stars, of course, as we mentioned with Clayton Kershaw, they've got a great young star in Walker Buehler. But for a team, to your point, Jim, that's been just a little bit short each of the last 2 years, if you expected to see a dramatic move by the Los Angeles Dodgers, yes, they made the rental move of Machado in the month of July, but we have not seen that aggressive, bold play from them. I believe this wintertime we'll see if something changes with the likes of a Harper or maybe a more dramatic trade that we're not quite anticipating at this point in time.
John Morosi joining us. John, one last guy really quickly. How likely is it in your mind that Cleveland moves Corey Kluber, and if so, where do you see him going?
I think it's at least 50-50, Jim. The Indians have to find a way to strengthen their outfield. They've got a very little bit of depth there in the outfield right now, so I think they're probably going to look to move Kluber, if they do, to get multiple outfielders back. And one team that's been very consistent in their interest in Kluber, the San Diego Padres. Now, the Dodgers have been interested as well, and I could see the Brewers or Phillies, depending on different circumstances, but the Padres have a really good mix of young, major league caliber position players, Manuel Margot, Hunter Renfro. They even got some young pitching too, Eric Lauer and Joey Lucchese, potentially to put in that move as well. So I would say if I'm going to watch carefully on Kluber, watch very closely the San Diego Padres, a team that has at different times gotten serious about contending. Now they see with the Diamondbacks and the division starting to rebuild, perhaps an opportunity for them to land Kluber and challenge the Dodgers.
You can see my guest on MLB Network, NHL Network, Fox Sports. John Morosi, always on point, all over it. John, great to have you back. Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year to you, Jim. And by the way, how about Snoop Dogg calling the play-by-play of that hockey game for the Kings the other day? That was awesome.
Was that so good? Really quickly, I got about a minute.
That.
What
he's
did you make
a,
of
he's
that?
He's a big hockey fan. I love it.
That was awesome. We need more of that. All right, John, way to have you. Good to have you.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jim.
That's a great point. Did you see Snoop on the call for the Kings? The only thing that would have been better is if he had done it for the Ducks. Hey, look, I'm not looking to pick sides. I'm not looking to choose sides here. Ducks. Ducks. This is a duck house. John Morosi on point on his game. Hey, Rome. Chasing is the move of a true degenerate gambler. Thanks. My chasing prop bet on Sony Michel scoring the first TD that broke me off five bills and covered all my losses. Matt in Vancouver. That's the thing. Is sometimes it works. Sometimes it works. My chasing saved my entire weekend. Does not always work. It always feels dirty, doesn't it? And desperate. Unless it works, then it feels brilliant. Hour number three, straight ahead. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Open phones next hour. Bring it right back.